There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Local Europe Edition. I'm James Savage in Stockholm, and this week I'm joined by Ben McPartland in Paris. All right, Ben, how are things?
Good afternoon, yeah, nice to be here. The news in France this week has overwhelmingly been dominated by the death of French rock legend Johnny Hallyday. Obviously from fans, but also just from mainstream politicians, from the president, from the media. It's been live blogs.
Okay, Johnny Hallyday, why is he so big? How could you compare him to something, to someone who's more internationally well-known?
I mean, it's a personal thing, but I think he comes in somewhere around Tom Jones for me. You know, kind of just a rocker that just keeps on going and going and going. Although I can't imagine if, you know, there'd be a similar reaction, you know, if Tom Jones passed away. But, you know, it's certainly been a huge kind of outpouring of national mourning. Like, literally everyone knows him. He's such a household name. And even if you don't like him, people are used to kind of really mock him still. You know, really upset that he's departed, you know.
Yeah, we'll all miss Johnny Hallyday. If we've had any of us who've had anything to do with France over the years have all got a special place for Johnny in our hearts. All right, well, this week though, we are going to be talking about other things. We're going to be talking about Christmas traditions across Europe. We're going to be talking about why French school children have been ranked the worst at reading in Europe. And we're going to be talking about doner kebabs in Germany and why they haven't been banned. And we're going to be talking about the hidden messages in IKEA furniture. All that and more coming up. Tis the season to be jolly. And while for some of us Christmas is a time for religion, it's also the season to bring out the ridiculous in everything. So Alex Macbeth, who has lived pretty much everywhere, has picked out some of his favourite Christmas traditions from across Europe. So Alex, what catches your imagination?
I grew up in Italy, and my parents, being British, you know, tried to tell me the best they could about Santa Claus. But Santa Claus, where I grew up, was essentially this rather large farmer who came to your house on a tractor. And I lived at the top of the hill, and he had to have a drink everywhere along the way before he got to my house. So I sort of saw a slightly inebriated Santa. Now, having done a bit of research, I found that actually almost all European nations have slightly dodgy Christmas traditions, which is reassuring. Another one, which I suppose is quite well known in Italy, is known as La Befana. Most people get three kings on the Epiphany, which is January 6th. Italy has its own equivalent, a sort of Mama Christmas, if you will, which is this old witch. Every family has one, and it's essentially a chance for an old lady to sort of come and beat her broomstick around the place. And also, occasionally, she hands out a few presents.
So it's like a violent old woman.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Violence is integral to the whole role. Yeah, and children are terrified of her and discuss it months in advance. And of course, parents use it in that kind of, you know, if you're bad, you will be put in the witch sack, or, you know, will be beaten with a broom.
Right. Now, Spain has some interesting things as well, right?
It does. Catalonia, especially. Christmas in Catalonia is sort of linked to defecating, as far as I can work out. Let me explain that for listeners before they think I've gone completely crazy. They've got two key traditions in Catalonia. One is called El Caganer, which literally means the crapper. It's a nativity piece. It's a small man kneeling over and taking a crap. And this nativity piece is inserted in all nativity pieces across Catalonia. Wikipedia describes it as an essential piece and the most popular of the nativity scene. The second sort of tradition that's linked to defecating is Tio Nadal, which is a wooden log that people place in their homes in the month of December. You often put a red blanket over them, paint a face on the log's head. And on Christmas Day, I believe the log is placed inside the fireplace and encouraged to defecate. Now, I've tried to look up why all this defecating is going on. It's not exactly clear. No, nobody really seems to know, but it's just sort of, you know, left its mark on Catalan Christmas culture.
So basically, a wooden log is encouraged to crap out your Christmas presents.
Basically, yeah, right next to the shitting shepherd. So that's just, you know, what has made it onto the nativity scene and what seems to keep Catalan hearts warm at Christmas.
Oh, fantastic. And in Sweden, of course, what they do is instead of St. Nicholas, they have a gnome who is about 90 centimetres tall, called Tomte. He's also bearded and he leaves presents, but you have to leave something out for him, otherwise he'll vandalise your property. So there's a sort of version of the Santa Claus thing there, but very different to the sort of Americanized version that we've got, or indeed the German or Dutch one. It's kind of fun how the same tradition you see in slightly different ways in different
places. Absolutely fascinating.
Fun, Alex. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good to speak to you.
Great to speak to you.
Now, Ben, what about you? What are your favorite French Christmas traditions?
The thing that struck me by coming into France originally was the big réveillon meal that the French families have on Christmas Eve and, of course, New Year's Eve. You know, we're talking oysters, foie gras, you know, the whole works, especially seafood. They seem to, you know, go for seafood on these kind of big Christmas Eve meals. Like, they have this galette de bois on the 6th of January where you hide this little kind of token in the galette, which is kind of another great pastry. You cut it up into pieces. Someone gets a crown. The kids hide under the table. There's a whole etiquette that goes with it, a real tradition. And you kind of think, well, this sounds a bit naff. But actually, you find yourself doing it every year. And especially you've got kids. It's such a big deal. Who wears the crown and who gets the little fievre, it's called, you know, the little kind of token they hide. But yeah, it's just always food related, the great traditions here.
And that's why we love France, isn't it?
The European Parliament is threatening to put the future of the doner kebab through the mincer. That, at least, was the story put about by German tabloid Bild this week, blaming stricter regulation of the additive phosphate. Jörg, first, now where I come from, the doner kebab is usually eaten only during the early stages of alcohol poisoning. But how's it being seen in Germany?
It's definitely quite a different attitude to the doner kebab here. Legend has it was even invented here, and it's in Berlin alone. I think I read that something like 60 tons of doner meat are consumed every day. And if you're walking down the street at 10 in the morning, you already see the doner spit spinning. So, yeah, it's sort of breakfast, lunch and dinner around here.
God almighty. Sounds delicious. But, okay, is the European Parliament actually banning it?
No, the Health Committee of the European Parliament turned down a European Commission change to the rules on phosphate, which is an additive in many foods, and they wanted to explicitly allow it for frozen meats, which would have included doner, but the health committee said that they wanted to wait on a report which the European Parliament has commissioned into the health risks of phosphates. That's going to be coming out some point towards the end of next year.
So these stories about EU banning popular foods, we've had British sausages and bendy cucumbers, and we've seen these, particularly in the UK, blown out of all proportion and turned into really big deals. Is this something we're seeing more of in Germany right now?
I wouldn't say you see a lot of it here, but there are. Bild does publish every now and again its own EU scare stories. It's done the bendy cucumbers. It's had one on men being forced to all wear the same size of condom. Various ones about the EU ruining the German language by forcing people to gender words. But there's also a lot of myth-busting from other newspapers on these things as well.
Well, thanks for the myth-busting, Jörg. Most appreciated.
Yeah, pleasure.
French schools are coming in for a lot of flack at the moment. In a new survey, French children's reading skills have been ranked the worst in Europe. But Ben, Are French schools really that bad?
It's interesting because in so many league tables come out at the moment that actually rank them pretty low down. This is the latest one, you know, that's shown that reading skills are as bad as they were in 2001. So not only have they not improved, they've got worse, which puts them, I think, only with the Netherlands as the two countries in Europe where reading abilities have gone down. Last year, there was a study that put them the worst in Europe for maths. They have regularly, each year, been ranked as the worst in Europe for learning English. In terms of these PISA rankings, which is kind of the OECD ones where, you know, they're kind of the probably most highly regarded, France scores kind of below average time and time again on them. And, you know, there's a real kind of, each year they come out, now there's kind of real thinking about what needs to be done. But, you know, nothing really ever seems to change. But, I mean, France has always had this reputation of having this great education system. But when you kind of look at all these league tables and you kind of come here and live here, you realise that actually the schools are coming for quite a lot of criticism, especially from foreign observers, I've noticed, you know, who are kind of still shocked by the way things are taught here.
What way are things bad? I mean, what's the problem? And what are the criticisms here?
I think it ranges from everything from kind of, I mean, let's just pick one thing out, like the grading system. You know, for young kids, it's like 0 to 20. Apparently, it's impossible to get near 20. Kids get marked down a lot. It instills low confidence. There's been studies out recently that suggest that this whole kind of school system that doesn't help breed any kind of confidence. It's no kind of encouragement. It's just kind of punishment for doing badly. Results in this kind of French being morose in a later life and having lack of confidence in the workplace. Everything seeps coming back to this French school system. And I think the problem is it's just not really changing. I mean, you know, even like teacher training here is one of the lowest levels in Europe. Apparently, you know, they just don't really invest in teachers. There's a kind of real it's really state run. There's not enough independence for schools. Head teachers aren't really head teachers. They're more kind of like administrators. And there's little tweaks done every few years by a new government, but there's no real kind of root and branch reform.
So they're basically letting down the kids who aren't academic.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, the high flyers will, you know, they'll kind of fly high no matter what. But and I think this is why they do so badly in league tables, is like everyone behind that, there's not enough encouragement for them to pull through. There's a huge number of French kids who repeat school years, you know, and drop out of school altogether. And I think it's there, you know, it's like, you know, it's in these areas, maybe the more deprived towns. I mean, even the teacher system here, you know, schools don't get to recruit their own teachers. Teachers are sent out, and a lot of the time, the worst teachers, or let's say the most inexperienced teachers rather than the worst, are sent to the harder areas, you know, and a lot of the best teachers will go to the nicer areas, you know, and teach in schools where, you know, the best teachers really should be out in the more deprived areas, you know. But that's it. I mean, essentially, it's still seen as being an elitist system.
All right, Ben, thanks very much.
The Swedish language is far from being the most widely spoken in the world, but thanks to furniture chain IKEA, it has won a global audience. Indeed, every time you go to IKEA, you're speaking Swedish, whether you knew it or not. Now, our Swedish resident, Swedish speaker, James, obviously, can tell us what these words mean. James, I'm going to put you on the spot a second now. See if you can get all of these. This is a good test for your Swedish, or a test of your IKEA, and how many times you go to IKEA a month, perhaps. Is more of a test of that. What about bekvam?
Okay, so that is bekvam, and this is one of their kitchen ranges, and it means comfortable.
I see. What about blaska?
That is a clothes basket, and I'll tell you what it means. It means rag, as in a newspaper, like a derogatory name for a newspaper.
What about furnuft? No idea if I've pronounced that right.
Right, that is a cutlery range, and it means sensible.
Is dans?
Is dans means it's a roller blind, and it means a dance on ice.
See, and what about mjød?
It's a beer tankard, and it means mead.
Right. How many of these have you got in your house then?
I haven't got any of these. Look, I cheated basically on this, but because I knew what you were going to ask me, so I looked them up ahead of time. But I think what's really fun about this, I'm not gonna try and kid our readers. But I think what's really, I think what's fun about this is, you know, you've got all these words, and if you're a Swedish speaker, you're going around IKEA, and everything means something. It either means it's either a word or it's a place that you probably recognise. So if you go to the creche, literally means little land, little country. So It's like it's all got proper meaning.
I mean, it can't just be IKEA that's got Swedish out there to the world. Is there any other Swedish words that we have as part of our kind of English vocabulary that we don't even know?
Smorgasbord.
Oh yeah, okay. That just as a reminder, that is.
So smorgasbord literally means sandwich table, and therefore, you know, it's a buffet. You've got that. You've got tungsten. The element tungsten actually literally means heavy stone.
Ah, interesting.
That's a Swedish word for you as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's bits of Swedish all over the place, actually. It's much
sneaking
more, much
in,
more.
Yeah. Now, listen, there are more rules about naming IKEA things, right?
Yes, there are. Certain things are named after places in Sweden and certain things that are named after places in Norway and Denmark. So this caused a bit of trouble a few years ago where a Danish professor complained that the shiniest, comfiest furnishings in the house were named after Swedish and Norwegian things. But the names of Danish towns are reserved for things that you walk all over, like doormats and carpets and stuff. So this, he said, was a sign of cultural imperialism on behalf of the Swedes. So, you know, Scandinavian relationships...
Was he right?
Well, Scandinavian relationships are very complicated. And they do sort of like taking offence at each other. But it's all slightly in jest. So I think it's all terribly low key in Scandinavian countries. Sure.
Okay, James, thanks very much for that. We definitely learned something about IKEA that I didn't know before today.
You're welcome, Ben. Well, that's just about all we've got time for this week. We'll be taking a break over Christmas, but we'll be back new and improved in 2018. Ben, thanks very much for joining us this week. Looking forward to having you back in the future.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm off to get some doner kebab meat on my new IKEA plates. But yeah, happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas. Au revoir.
Hej då.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.